This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing 13 going on 30. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss?
Yeah! Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one. Is it amazing or is it a mess / awful movie in the month of May? Today we are,
in case it wasn't clear enough,
we are finishing our off this month with 13 going on 30, and I am here with my bestie, who I would not leave hanging if she started doing the thriller dance, even though I don't know how to do it, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Aww, I would totally leave you in the lurch. I would. I'm sorry. But I am here with my bestie, who I knew at 13 and who I also knew at 30, Corinne Edding.
So, Tam, I have to tell you, I realized that my sugar intake was like more than a little, but a lot-le. And I was like, you know, I should just like reel back the sugar. And, you know, since I've made this realization, because I looked at like the nutritional content on a can of soda that I was drinking, and I was like, 110%. That it was a big can of soda. But even in the regular can of soda, it was like 80%. I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to chill out on the sugar, not cutting it out completely, but just, you know, like doing less. And it's going really well, except for today, before we met for the recording, I went to the grocery store and I was like, feeling fine, feeling good, feeling fine, feeling good. I'm just going to get some mint chip ice cream. I'm going to get...
Were you feeling fine and feeling good? Is my question.
Feeling fine and feeling good with some mint chip ice cream, some Pepperidge Farm freezer cake, and some Uncrustables. Totally. Oh, and chocolate pudding. Totally feeling fine, feeling good. I'm doing great. Doing great on this cutting back on the sugar thing. Now, mind you, I did purchase all of that stuff. I am not going to eat all of that stuff all at once or anything like that. But I was like, I feel like there's something more at play here. Maybe I'm not feeling so fine and good.
As a girl who just hoovered 7 Butterfinger minis, I am judging you harshly. Speaking of food, I noticed an odd thing the other day that I have to share with you to get your insight to. Because Melody does a thing. I know she gets anxious. She's an old dog, and I've moved her around quite a bit. And so sometimes when I get home at night, and she comes and greets me, she'll go to her food or water bowl. If there's any food left, she'll eat it. If there's water, she'll just like drink the bejeebus out of her water like she was waiting for me all day to drink it. And I'm just like, that's what she does. I've accepted it. It's how she's been for a long time. Yeah. The other night, I came over here to Larry's, and Larry was asleep. He fell asleep in the chair. I got home pretty late. I had a meeting with my boss. And so I went over and I kissed him hello. And he was like, oh, hey, how's it going? And then immediately he gets up and he goes, I got to go eat this chicken in the fridge. And I was like, what? Am I an appetite aphrodisiac or something? Ooh. Like, why does everyone feel the need to eat or drink when I enter the room? And I was just like, he was over there like heating up his chicken. And I was like, what just happened? I'm like, why did you see me and think chicken? And he said it was because he was hungry earlier, but he had worked out and he'd been up since like 4 o'clock in the morning. Oof. So he had worked out and he intended on eating something, but he fell asleep and stayed asleep until I came home. So when I woke him up, he's like, food. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
I think that you are an appetite aphrodisiac, though. And
I guess.
And every kind of food you give me tastes better because you're awesome. Aww. So awesome at preparing it. So.
Oh, well, that's true. That is true. Yeah. That's a fact. It was just nice, though, because every time I come home and Melody's doing it, I'm like, why do you do this? And she can't answer me. So when Larry did it, I'm like, why do you do this? He's like, because I was hungry. Okay. Got you. Tamara, the appetite aphrodisiac.
Ooh. So, Miss Tamara, my Aphrodite. appetite.
I can do that. I can be your Aphrodite. That's fine.
Yes.
I can be more than one thing to more than one person. I am multifaceted.
My appetite aphrodisiac Aphrodite. Do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. This movie's going to be so much fun because I just, every time I watch it, I'm like, what would I think if I was 13 in my like present day body? First of all, I'd wonder why I was so tired, but that's not the point. Anyways, synopsis. Jenna Rink, which is the most 13-year-old name ever, played by Jennifer Gardner, is a tween who floats under the radar at school. She's tolerated and kind of used by the cool girls called the Six Chicks, and has a constant companion in her bestie and neighbor, Matt, played by Mark Garofalo. Now, let me be clear. Mark and Jennifer are wonderful actors. This movie was cast very well, but they do not play the actual 13-year-olds. They play the eventual adults that they become when Jenna's 13th birthday wish is granted. It happens at a birthday party. Jenna is humiliated by the Six Chicks and just wants to grow up already and be 30, flirty, and thriving. Fairy dust, fairy dust, fairy dust, and wish granted. She wakes up as an adult in a strange town, but still has the mind and maturity level of a 13-year-old. Jenna seeks out her old pal Matt to help her, but finds that they're not friends anymore. In fact, Jenna's not the person she thought she'd grow up to be. Will Jenna stay grown and be stuck with a pubescent mind paired with perky 30-year-old boobs? Or will she find a way back to childhood, her family, and friendship? Stay with us as we tag along with Jenna, the girl who's 13 going on 30.
That was a fantastic synopsis. And I would like to point out that the actress who plays young Jennifer Garner, if you look at her IMDb photo, she actually looks kind of like Jennifer Garner.
Does she?
Yeah.
I kind of hate it though when that, well, it's a spoiler, but when she gets older and they're like, you had a nose job. And I'm like, oh.
But you know what? They do the whole Tom had a nose job thing and Jennifer Garner had a nose job. But I was like, I was particularly impressed with the Tom to old adult Tom like match. It looked really good. Oh.
That was so, they were spot on with that one.
Yeah.
But enough about the casting, Corinne. Are you ready to jump into 13 going on 30?
I'm ready to blow out the candle, make a wish. Yes. It's 1987 and picture day. Nearly 13-year-old Jenna is set to have her photo taken, but is irritated by the photo guy calling her Gina over and over. It results in a disappointing mid-motion, my name is Jenna photo. Not exactly what you want in the yearbook. Some time has passed and it's Jenna's 13th birthday. Woot woot, teenager dumb, here you come. I felt no different when I turned 13. I was like, this is a scam. But
I'm trying to remember my 13th birthday. Nope, it's a blank.
That would have been end of 7th grade for you. No. Yeah. End of 7th grade for you.
I think we probably would have already been in summer vacation because I recall most of my birthdays in my elementary and middle school years fell during summer vacation, which is a blessing in itself.
Summer between 7th and 8th grade. Woohoo.
Yay. Definitely don't remember it.
Yeah.
Definitely don't.
Oh. Actually, we were in summer school that year together.
Were we?
Yeah. Really odd.
I was in summer school?
Yes. My mom, because I got really bad grades in sixth grade, because I was a year behind you, made me do summer school. And you happened to actually be at summer school as well. And it was,
I did not get bad grades. Why the hell was I in summer school? I didn't get bad grades until I started high school.
I don't know. I do not know. All I know is I had to do summer school, which was me sitting in a classroom full of people and doing like crosswords. And I was like, this is the lamest thing ever.
Oh, wait. Was it at a different, it wasn't at Shepherd?
No, it wasn't at Shepherd. It was at a different school.
Yes. Okay. Now I remember because I remember seeing Jolene's there. And I think that's how we became friends the next year because we both had summer school.
Aww.
I think. I don't remember. I block out so many of those years.
Oh. Happy it's birthday. All a blur.
Yay, 13.
And see, and now you're turning 13-7.
Sure, okay.
13-14-7. Yeah, there we go.
That's right.
Yes, that one. So anyways, it's Jenna's 13th birthday. She's at school, has the present of her disappointing school pics, but also has the companionship of her childhood friend, Matt, who snaps a photo of the both of them to document her birthday. Just then, a squad of girls comes walking down the hall. Jenna pulls herself together. "Hi, Tom Tom," she says. Tom Tom replies, "Hi, Jenna. Hi, Beaver. How are things at the dam?" Matt says, "Nothing, wise man." And Tom Tom asks Jenna, "How'd your pictures come out?" Jenna responds, "Not so great," clutching the pictures to her chest. Tom Tom says, "Yeah, me too." And her girl gang automatically responds, "No, Tom Tom, your pictures are great. Yeah, Tom Tom, they're the best." Tom Tom gets a cocky look on her face and thrusts her photos forward. Jenna gushes, "You're so photogenic." Matt tells Jenna, "I'll meet you out front." And Tom Tom snarkily says, "Do whatever you want. It's not like we need a play-by-play." Matt rolls his eyes and walks through the girl gang to get some fresh air.
Oof. Questions. First of all, why does Tom Tom call Matt Beaver? Because he doesn't have like bucked teeth or anything, or a flat, large tail coming out of his backside.
Because she's awful and, you know, oh yeah. Hmm. Her middle schoolers can be awful.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever have a bad photo day picture?
Huh. Multiple bad photo day pictures. Yes.
But like mid-talking, not like where you're like, "I am going to kill you with my eyes," to the photographer.
No, I just looked like sulky and had mullets. And I was just like, I hate my life. Yeah, it just looked really bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had one bad photo. Like my photos weren't that great either, don't get me wrong. But there was one where I was kind of like smiling and I was leaning over like this. And so half of my shoulder, and I was grossly off center and looking like I was sliding out of the picture.
Uh-huh.
And that was the one year my dad decided to buy some.
Oh, no.
And so when I brought him home and he saw them, he was so mad at me.
Oh,
like,
no.
I had taken the picture myself. And he's like, "You're going to take these back and return them." I don't think I ever did. So I was just like, it's not my fault. I didn't know it was going to look like this. But it just totally like brought me back to that moment. I don't remember a lot when I was 13, except for some of the bad things that slipped through the cracks. Like her when she took that bad picture. And I was like, twitch, 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 twitch.
Oh, my mom made me retake, because there's like the photo retake day. My mom made me retake,
yes,
like one or two. And she's like, "You're going to smile."
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to smile.
I just waited till my dad forgot about it. And I was like, "Yeah, we're just never going to speak of this again. I'm throwing them in the bottom of the drawer and they're never going to see the light of day."
You're like, "Hey, Dad, want a beer?"
Yeah, exactly. And we're done here.
Tom Tom pulls Jenna aside for a quick private chat. She says that her and the six chicks, her girl gang, really wanted to go to Jenna's party, as did Jenna's boy crush, Chris Grandy. But none of them are going to be able to make it because of a lame group project they have to work on. Jenna, however, has been manipulated into, has thought of a solution. Jenna offers eagerly, "Why don't I do the project for you? That way you can come to the party." Tom Tom feigns disinterest. "No, no, we couldn't possibly. Well, now that you mention it, that is a great idea." Because nothing says good friend like a little exploitation, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. When she's at home, Jenna is doing herself up for the party, feathering her bangs, slathering on the kissing cooler, stuffing her bra, and reading Poise magazine.
Did you ever stuff your bra?
I did. A couple of times, but I didn't have to do it too long because these bad boys grew in real, real fast. It's like they're still growing or something. Like I carry all my weight in my upper body and a lot of it seems to filter into my boobs. Not mad at it, but didn't have to stuff my bra for long. Oh, I did, however, embarrassing side story, speaking of which, my sister, she developed even earlier and faster than me. And for the longest time, we were only a year apart, I had inverted nipples. And for some reason, this bothered me to no end because I felt like they should be outies, not innies. And my sister, she knew this. She preyed on my weakness, that evil genius.
Oh, she preyed on your weakness in all the different ways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, but this one, this stuck especially hard because she told me one day when she walked into the room and I was prepubescent and probably right before I was going to start stuffing my bras and looked down at my chest and said, if you don't have boobs already, you're never going to get them. And why I believed her, because she didn't have boobs, but apparently she was the goddamn fucking
boob fairy.
She was the expert.
Oh, yes.
She was the expert on boobage. And I apparently thought that her word was the scripture. And I was so upset that I went screaming and crying to my dad because he raised us.
Oh, no.
Dad, and he said, I'm not going to get any boobs if I don't have any. And he was trying, God bless him, so hard not to laugh. But I could tell he was laughing, which made me even more upset.
Oh.
And he tried to console me as best he could. But the reason why I bring this up is because it's relevant. And to the day he died, he would remind me, you remember that one time?
No!
Denise said that she weren't going to get any boobs. And he ran up to me crying because he thought she weren't going to get any boobs. He would try not to pointedly look at my chest. But I get the gist, Dad. Yes, thank yeah. you. I was wrong. I was misguided. Leave my chest alone. So, yeah, I got that story coming back at me over and over again throughout the years.
Well, I didn't want boobs, so I...
Well, you can have some of mine.
Yeah.
Or you could have... No. You could have given me yours, I should say.
I wouldn't mind having smaller ones than I have now, and mine are manageable.
I'm glad that I have the boobs that I have because I have told you I started working out pretty regularly. Uh-huh. And when I lose weight, hopefully, which if I keep going with it, they'll still be voluptuous. Anyways, back to the show.
Yes.
Jenna's parents barge into her room, surprise, with the video camera to document this momentous occasion. But Jenna gets super aggro when her mom de-stuffs her bra and pulls out the tissue.
Oof.
Ugh. She shows her mom an article entitled, 30 Flirty and Thriving and Wants to be 30 so bad. No, you don't, Jenna. Or at least to have 30-year-old boobs. She can't grow up fast enough, and her mom encourages her just to slow down and be the beautiful 13-year-old you are. As if. I do remember my parents telling me to slow down and not trying to grow up too fast. And I'm like, you don't believe it at the time when they tell you that. You're like, shut up. But now I'm like, oh, yeah, I should have just... enjoyed the not paying bills time of my life.
Yeah, I don't. I'm happy that I'm grown. Man, the not paying bills time of my life was miserable. So I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, it was miserable for me too. But there was times where like the not having responsibility and running around in the streets till the street lights came on and just doing whatever the heck we wanted and playing was nice.
Yes.
I can't think of a better word for it. It was freedom until we had to go back inside the house.
I didn't have the freedom that you did.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But then again, it was only outside of the house. Once I went back inside the house, it was a whole other story. Yeah. Jenna's getting the basement ready for the party, doing the Thriller dance and waiting for people to arrive when Matt comes downstairs with the large box. She opens it and he explains that he made her a Jenna dream house. It's like a Barbie dream house, but so much better. It has details for days, including a full stereo system, Jenna in a bubble bath reading Poise magazine, and Matt hanging out as well, making sure that Ken, a.k.a. Rick Springfield, who's loafing on the couch, keeps his hands to himself.
It was so cute.
It was so super cute. I want that now.
Yeah.
Matt opens a package of wishing dust and sprinkles it over the house, glitter cascading down on the building. But before she has a chance to make her wish, the doorbell rings. And she quickly shoves Matt's dollhouse in the closet, explaining, I'm just putting it there so we'll have room to dance.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Sure.
She rushes upstairs, and Tom and the six chicks are waiting at the door. They pile their jackets into Jenna's arms and head to the basement. Then a Corvette pulls up and Chris Grandy, a blonde wearing a Letterman's jacket, heads over and his two other friends pile out of the car. Swoon! All of Jenna's dreams are becoming a reality. But are they?
I think so. Jenna goes downstairs where Matt is bopping to the Talking Heads, burning down the house. Tom Tom says with a sneer, what is this music? Jenna is dismissive. I don't know, just something Matt is playing. Way to be a good friend, Jenna. throw your...
I have to say that Matt is surprisingly an individual. Like, he's like, fuck y'all. I like what I like, and I'm not going to conform, you bunch of robots.
That's how I was, and things were very hard for me because of that. Yeah. Tom goes over to the radio, pops out Matt's mixtape, and drops it into his hands, saying, majority rules. Matt, turning to Jenna, says, I'm heading home to get my Casio. That's an electric piano, FYI, peeps. Jenna responds, do whatever you want, Matt. It's not like I need a play-by-play. Oh, this hurt my heart so bad. Mm-hmm. You are a mayes, Miss Jenna. Mm-hmm. Not so much a mayazine, but...
No.
Matt is a mayazine, for sure. Whew. The people at the party laugh at Jenna's comment, and Matt heads out, looking warily around the room. As soon as he's gone, Tom's eyes light up diabolically. Okay, I know what we should do. Play 7 minutes in heaven. Jenna, you go first because you're the birthday girl. But what she really means is, let's shove Jenna in the closet with a blindfold, take the project proposal she wrote for us, snake her party snacks, and ditch the party and Jenna. Everyone quietly sneaks out while Jenna is in the closet, Tom's colorful neckerchief tied around her head as a blindfold, waiting patiently for her dream kiss from Chris Grandy. Matt walks by the departing party guests and asks Tom, what's going on? Tom replies encouragingly, Jenna's waiting for you in the closet. Matt heads over to the closet, opening the door to a blindfolded Jenna sitting on the floor against a shelf. She says with a smile, I thought you weren't going to come, and holds out her hands. Matt intertwines his fingers with hers and leans in for a kiss when, kisses, interrupt us! Jenna dreamily says, oh, Chris. Matt, upset, responds, it's not Chris, it's Matt. And Jenna swiftly yanks the blindfold off. Where's Chris? She looks around the room. Where's everyone? What did you do? Matt tries explaining, but Jenna is determined to burn it all down. She pushes Matt out of the closet and slams the door, retreating to said closet. I have said closet 5 times. She stares, he stares, they stare.
We really need to know where she's at, Corinne. It's okay. She's in the closet.
Closet. Yes.
Where is she? In the closet?
Closet. Maybe. In the closet. Uh-huh. There you go. So she retreats to the closet, recovering her eyes and rocking back and forth on the floor, saying, I wish I was 30 and flirty and thriving. She chants it over and over again, knocking against the shelf. The dollhouse is on, and some of the wishing sparkles fall on her.
Ooh. And then she says, God damn it, it's so hard to get glitter out of everything. Shoot.
It's the herpes of the craft world.
Okay. She doesn't say that. The next thing we know, 13-year-old Jenna is waking up in a Jenna 30 flirty and thriving's body.
Ooh.
Wearing a light pink chemise. It feels like just moments ago she was a 13-year-old and now she's a woman, W-O-M-A-N. Hey. I'll say it again.
Hey! Yes, you did it! I was hoping you would.
She understandably freaks out when she finds herself in a New York City penthouse and sees herself in the mirror. Look at your boobs! Your boobs! I'm obviously preoccupied with boobs because now I realize it all stemmed from when I was a prepubescent girl in my room and my sister told me I'd never grow any. Sorry, gentle listeners.
Your boobs are beautiful, Tamara. Just want to affirm that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're all natural, too. She wanders around trying to figure out what's going on, finds a stack of mail, and all of the letters have her name on it. She lives there? What? Nothing's making sense, so she tries calling her parents, but their answer machine lets her know that they've gone on a cruise. She accuses their machine, you went on a cruise without me? As if things couldn't get worse, this freakout gets even bigger, and she discovers a strange naked man in her apartment who flashes her a winky winky, invites her to shower with him, and she, whoa, no, grabs her purse, a pair of heels, and her jacket, and jets the fuck outside. She stumbles out onto a busy New York City sidewalk, and Lucy Wyman is waiting for Jenna with a car. Jenna looks at the blonde woman who's yelling at her, "Get in the car, we're running late! Jenna! Jenna, please! Get in the car!" And she tries noping on out. "No, I don't get in cars with strangers!" Lucy eventually convinces her to come with her, but can tell her friend is not her usual self. When their car pulls over, Lucy gets out and starts walking as Jenna yells from behind her, "You don't understand, I'm 13! Lucy rolls her eyes. "You've chosen a really odd time to be lying about your age. Also, what grown person would lie about being 13 unless they're trying to catch a predator with Dateline?" Yes. Jenna tries explaining, but Lucy isn't having it. She stops Jenna outside of their office building and says, "Jenna, we have a meeting in 10 minutes and you need to get yourself together, okay? Here's what you're going to do. Repeat after me." And she has Jenna repeat some very useful information so that Jenna knows she is an editor at Poise Magazine. Lucy, so I'm going to give that more weight than it had. She's an editor at Poise Magazine.
The place that told her that she could be 30, flirty, and thriving.
Flirty and thriving. See, if you just really, really, really believe in those magazines, someday you'll magically turn 18 years older than you are, 17.
End up in a penthouse as her apartment.
No, you'll just be their editor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You'll just be an editor for them if you really, really believe.
Editor at a fashion magazine, top fashion magazine. Yes,
Lucy and Jenna head up to the staff meeting, and Jenna's assistant, Arlie, nervously brings in her scone and coffee. As Jenna does what she knows and writes her name atop the legal pad she has in front of her, which I thought was super cute.
Yes!
Arlene asks Jenna if there's anything else she can do, and Jenna lets her know, "Yeah, there's a person I want you to find." But their boss, Richard, shoos Arlene out. So Jenna does what any quick-thinking 13-year-old would. She writes Matt's name and number on a piece of paper, balls it up, and throws it at Arlene, hitting her in the back on her way out.
Probably not the worst treatment that Arlene has received from the timid way
definitely not
that she approaches her.
Poor Arlene. Oh. Although, if you believe the Devil Wears Prada, Arlene doesn't seem like the type of receptionist that they would hire at Poise Magazine.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes people slip through the cracks. But it ends in yeah.
I also thought there was a really cute scene when she was walking upstairs with her friend Tom, and she was walking like through the busy magazine office, and somebody says, "Eminem's on the phone. He needs an answer." And her 13-year-old self was like, "Plane, peanut, no plane."
Peanut. It's always peanut.
Yeah. And Lucy was looking at her like, "What the fuck?" And I was like, "Oh my God, that's cute." Cause she doesn't know that Eminem's an artist. She thinks he's talking about the candy. Yeah. That's so sweet.
And I just picture, like, because they have the commercials now with the animated M&Ms, them being like, "Hello, yes, I'm here."
The M&Ms that get eaten, that everyone's trying to eat in the commercials. That's, like, so barbaric and kind of morbid. But, yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
At the staff meeting, we find out that someone has been leaking the information on Poise's upcoming covers to Sparkle Magazine. The gasp.
That was really believable. It's a real believable gasp, Corinne. And you're clutching your make-believe pearls.
Yes, I am. Each month they've been getting scooped on their magazine. This month's cover, J-Lo has 10 secrets. But on Sparkle's cover, J-Lo has 11 secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so much more compelling than 10.
Ooh, what's the 11th one? Derriere injections.
Oh, no. She is all natural. Winky, winky.
I don't know. Like, after her, just ass plants ran rampant. Like, everybody was getting ass injections because they wanted the J-Lo Kardashian booty. Did not even know that was a thing.
That there were ass plants?
Yeah, no. I did not know there were ass. I mean, I thought there was, but, like, for people whose asses got blown off in, like, accidents or something, not just to make them bigger.
There was a very brief period of time where I watched plastic surgery shows.
Oh, no.
Very brief.
No.
During that time, I discovered that there were, like, guys who'd be like, "My calves aren't beefy enough. I'm getting calf implants." Yeah, everything.
Did they show, like, the incisions and the blood and everything?
I didn't look at that stuff. I'd just be like,
that's the stuff I can't watch.
Yeah.
when I had my most previous procedure and I had to get like a small procedure, but they're like, look, here's the video camera so you can see exactly what the doctor's doing. And I was like, eh-eh. And she goes, did you hear me? I was like, yes, I heard you. I'm not looking at it. I'm going to be staring at that spot on that corner of the room, exactly opposite of the monitor. And I'm not going to turn around, just so you know.
Seriously. Yeah. My mom just got a colonoscopy and she was explaining to me that there's a difference between a colonoscopy and something or another that's like almost like a colonoscopy, but not as intensive or whatever. And she's like, yeah, and they'll try and convince you that you'll want to watch it on video, but I don't. And I'm like, no, I wouldn't either.
Why would you want to? Why? So you know what the inside of your ass looks like in case it goes missing or something?
There's little help wanted posters on the inside. Not help wanted posters. There's like little, like looking for posters.
Have you seen me?
Yeah. Have you seen me posters on the inside?
Oh, no. Ugh. I mean, if it's like, I can't watch surgery shows because I can't stand blood and all that stuff. Yeah. So seeing it done to somebody else is one thing. Seeing it done to me, I'm like, oh, hell, motherfucker, no.
Oh,
I will freak the fuck out. I will freak the fuck out.
I had jaw surgery, and before the jaw surgery, they're like, okay, now we're going to sit you in this room with this. It was a laser disc at the time, and it'll show you the entire procedure from beginning to end. I was like, winky, winky, sure, I'll watch it. Winky, winky. I just like sat in the room for a while. I was like, okay, I think enough time has passed. Yeah, saw the video, really informative. I don't care, surprise me. Like,
yeah. It's like doctors nowadays, I think they get trained to, we're going to make you more comfortable by letting you know exactly what's happening. I'm like, no, just wake me up at the end. You're the pro here. I put my life in your hands. It's fine.
Yeah, we're good.
Like you said, surprise me. Surprise me.
After the reveal of another month of their covers being scooped, Richard, the boss, throws out a slew of abbreviations talking about the FOB and the BOB and assorted other industry terminology. And I looked it up. FOB is front of book and BOB is back of book. Not the rapper / musical artist who is also a flat earther, by the way. Which is too bad.
Those abbreviations aren't nearly as impressive as I thought they'd
be. I know! I was like, there's got to be something more. Oh, no, I guess. Nope. Nothing more to them than that. Yeah. So.
It's the fob and the bob, Corinne. The fob and the bob.
The fob and the bob. You know, the fob and the bob.
Mm-hmm.
Richard asks Jenna what she thinks, and she savvily replies, can I go to the bathroom? The table looks at her puzzled because what grown-ass person asks to go to the bathroom? But regardless, Jenna is able to skip out on the meeting and wanders the halls of Poise until she finds her office and ducks into it. She finds out from the pics on her wall that the naked guy from her apartment is her boyfriend and a hockey player. She has a framed photo of herself with Rudy Giuliani. That doesn't age well. As well as one with Madonna that says, anytime you want drinks, babe, let's hang. Jenna gently touches the framed photo, saying in awe, Madonna and I are friends. Her reverie is interrupted by a knock on the door, and it's her assistant, Arlene, who, this just in, it's confirmed, Arlene is terrified of Jenna. I repeat, Arlene is terrified of Jenna. Arlene says timidly through a crack in the door that, I have some messages for you. Your mom called this morning. Jenna is shook. Why didn't you let me know? Arlene responds cautiously. You told me to avoid all conversations with her? Halfway ducking behind the door, Jenna is fixing this situation right now. Well, in the future, please let me know. Arlene also gives Matt's contact information to Jenna. He apparently lives in the village. Which village? Jenna asks. Arlene is confused. Greenwich Village? She cautiously says. And Jenna, totally not chill, responds, oh yeah, Greenwich Village, I knew that, yeah. And she takes the address from Arlene and doesn't bother with the...
She didn't bother.
She does not bother with the rest of her workday. Instead, she heads out of the office to talk to Matt. Obviously, what one does is just like ditch out on the workday. She got a hall pass, you know.
Mm-hmm. She's 13. She's like, I don't want to be here because people don't know I will catch on that I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. They're already on to me as it is. They thought she was hungover. Crisis averted. But if she stuck around, they would have smelled her fraudness. Cut to bzz, bzz, bzz. Jenna rings the apartment buzzer for Matt's apartment, which doesn't work well because Jenna can hear Matt, but Matt can't hear Jenna's. This is Jenna. I'm looking for Matt. I don't know if you're the right Matt, but if you used to live on Spruce Street and if your favorite shirt is the Gray Velour one, then I need to speak to you right now. Message. Probably better that he didn't because he likely wouldn't have opened the door. Instead, Matt says, I can't hear you. If you're from Mean Gardens, ring twice and I'll buzz you in. Jenna, knowing an opportunity when she sees one, buzzes twice and rushes to his apartment door. When she gets to Matt's door, she pounds on it, and Matt is very sad that Mean Gardens hasn't delivered him a surprise meal. He peers through the door, his chain lock on, and Jen appears back at him. Matt, you're so tall. Different. He looks at her blankly.
Hunky.
Jenna continues surprised.
Hello, Mark Ruffalo.
Jenna continues surprised. You don't know me? You were just there yesterday. She then talks swiftly to herself. It's not yesterday because you're not 13. And Matt's brain hamster has been really working hard on the hamster wheel because he actually guesses Jenna? Jenna Rink? Then slams the door. But it was just to unlock the chain. He opens the door and she rushes in and hugs him. Matt says stiffly, come on in. So why are you here? Jenna confesses. Something really weird has happened. It was my 13th birthday yesterday, and then today I woke up, and I'm this, and you're that. He rightfully asks her if she's high, but she dismisses that. No! I came here because I need you to help me remember my life. He is dismissive. I don't know anything about you. I haven't seen you since high school. We're not friends anymore. Jenna's confused and a little bit heartbroken. Aww. But you're my best friend.
Wait, Jenna, really? Because the way that you were treating him on your 13th birthday, I mean, before you got mad at him and pushed him out of the closet, but whenever you were in front of Tom Tom, not so cool, not so good, not best friend moves.
See, that was her new bitchy vibe, though. That was fleeting. Ugh. She can't just totally dismiss the wonderful 12 some odd years that they had prior to that.
See, she's still
in old Jenna world, not new Jenna world.
Gotcha.
She's still operating under the fact that they're friends. She starts having a panic attack and Matt asks, do you want some water, fresh air? Jenna says, yes, I need water, fresh air, and a fluffy pillow. He responds, okay, I'll just get you some water. And she impulsively demands, I need a fluffy pillow and I need it now. Next thing we know, Jenna's sitting on a park bench, drinking a glass of water and hugging a fluffy pillow.
You know, we all have our fluffy. I've had my fluffy pillow moments where it's just been like, no, that's what I need. Fluffy pillow, fluffy pillow, fluffy pillow. Once she's feeling better, Matt walks Jenna back to her apartment. On the way there, he explains to her kindly that their lives went separate ways and they probably weren't seeing each other over the holidays because she was probably at St. Bart's with her friends. He tries leaving her at the door to her building, but she calls after him, asking, who's St. Bart's? And he decides to accompany her, which I'm like, she is really naive because I can tell you that I know as much about St. Bart's now as I did then, but I knew it was a place. And I know it's a place. That's the limit of my knowledge.
Nope. I did not know St. Bart's was a place. If somebody told me that, I'd be like, is that a Catholic priest?
Is he related to Bart Simpson?
Is that it? Our Lady de Guadalupe? Down in downtown San Jose?
No. Oh, Our Lady of Guadalupe! Matt decides to accompany Jenna upstairs after that comment, and they look through her high school yearbooks together. And Matt says, those were the worst years of my life. While Jenna, completely oblivious, sees that she was a six chick. Apparently, she killed off Brie Larson for the spot.
Was that really Brie Larson? Brie Larson was a six chick?
Brie Larson was a six chick. And then when they show the picture in the yearbook, there's six chicks there, but Brie Larson is no longer. Yeah.
I was wondering whose spot she took.
Yes.
Bye-bye, Brie.
Bye-bye, Brie. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I stick my leg out for you while you were going to walk down the stairs? Oops. Yeah.
You go off and be Captain Marvelous or whatever the hell you are.
Yes. Jenna was prom queen. She went with Chris Grandy and she was besties with Tom Tom. She doesn't bother to ask Matt what her relationship with him was like in high school, but she does wonder what happened to Tom Tom. The important things, you know. And Matt fills her in. I think you're still pretty good friends. You even work together. Jenna is thrilled. Oh my gosh, yes, Lucy! All of my dreams came true! Her reverie is interrupted by her phone ringing. She finds out that she's going to a party that evening. Oh wait, no, this is not a cell phone. Bring, bring. There we go.
That was a rather lackluster phone, Corinne. I think you could do better.
Bring, bring. Bring, 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 bring. She finds out that she's going to a party that evening at 8:30 that Poise is putting on at the Palace on 27 Wall Street, and a limo is picking her up. She hangs up and does a happy dance, enthusiastically inviting Matt to her party, but he declines. What? He can't make it. Jenna's disappointed, but lets him know the party deets in case he can make it. Matt politely thanks her and gets the fuck out of there because this whole afternoon has been pretty surreal.
Cue montage one. Jenna getting ready to the Whitney Houston songs. I want to dance with somebody.
Ooh.
Full on middle school makeup. Nothing subtle about it. And the dress. Corinne wrote, I'll let Tamara describe her look. And Tamara says, it's like a Spice Girls Gwen Stefani mashup. The dress is teal, fuchsia, and burgundy. It has vertical stripes with a chartreuse bra top. And she's also wearing a huge turquoise butterfly necklace and dangly earrings. And her hair is a bunch of erupting pieces from a crap ton of clips. It is a look.
It is a look. And I have to confess that I love her dress. I would totally wear that dress.
Oh, you totally would wear that dress. As Jenna hands out to her party, she runs into 13-year-old Becky, her neighbor, in the elevator. Becky is very confused as to why Jenna's talking with her because Jenna usually ignores her, and I'm guessing that's at a minimum. She's probably pretty rude. Jenna compliments Becky on her shoes, and Becky compliments Jenna on her dress. She grabs her breasts, smooshing them up to her chest, exclaiming, it's because I've got these incredible boobs to fill them out! Oh, I would do the same, Jenna. I would do the same. Once they get out of the elevator, Becky compliments her on her purse and Jenna is thrilled. She has a ton of them upstairs and invites Becky to hang out. Jenna's thrilled that she may have made a friend, but Becky is wary and we don't blame her. Stranger danger, girl. Stranger danger. Cue montage number two. Jenna riding in the limo to What I Like About You and entering the party, which is hopping. And a woman walks by with a tray of a shrimp cocktail. Jenna grabs a shrimp, says thank you to the waiter, continues to look around the room in awe, all the adult nightlife happening around her, and promptly throws the shrimp tail over her shoulder, oblivious to the guy she hits behind her. Jenna finally sees Lucy, a.k.a. Tom Tom, scree, and rushes over saying, hi, Tom Tom. Tom Tom, I mean Lucy, doesn't appreciate being called that. She hasn't been called that since her nose job. And we find out that Jenna's also got a nose job, too. Oh, our little girls are growing up so fast these days. They order drinks, an apple tini for Lucy and a pina colada, not virgin. Thank you very much for Jenna. Two drinks in, and Jenna is thrilled to be out past 11 on school night and throwing her pineapple slices willy-nilly behind her, looking like it hits the same guy that was assaulted by her shrimp tail earlier, that poor guy.
I didn't notice that. I knew she hit somebody with the fucking pineapple slice, but oh my goodness.
I don't know. All the guys kind of look the same, so it might have been in my mind. I'm like, yep, she's just pummeling this poor guy with her food waste.
Mm-hmm.
But Lucy points out that the party is a dud. Everyone is leaving. Jenna's a bit too absorbed with her pina colada when who approaches them but Trish, the editor of Sparkle.
Yes.
Lucy virtually hisses at her. Oh, are things so bad at Sparkle that you have to come here for your free food? Put some crab in your purse for later. Trish rolls her eyes. Yeah, our magazine is doing great. Maybe you should change the name of your magazine to Poison or Pathetic. Jenna interrupts. I don't like you. You're rude, mean, sloppy, and frizzy. Trish is not impressed by her burns. I don't care what anyone thinks. All I want to do is win. And she pushes past them, walking away. As soon as she leaves, their boss, Richard, approaches them, freaking out. The party is terrible. No one's dancing. Everything's a disaster. Jenna, with some piña colada-induced courage, goes over to the DJ who's been playing deep house beats, and requests a song. Suddenly, the opening notes of... We'll find out what happens after the break. Ooh. And we're back.
YMCA.
No, Corinne. No, not that. That's not the song.
Oh.
I'll give you two more guesses.
Macarena. Hey, Macarena.
No, honey. Clucking Macarena was like 3 episodes ago.
Oh. I want to dance with somebody. I want to feel the heat with somebody.
That was the closest you were. When we left off, Jenna was going to try to get the party started with the song. What song? Corinne was wrong 3 times. Benny! Beep, beep, beep. Chick-a-dung, dung, 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 dung. Chick-a-dung, dung, 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 dung. Michael Jackson's Thriller. Thriller starts playing and Jenna tentatively walks into the center of the empty dance floor. After a few bars, she starts twitching. At first, we were all worried, and then we realized, oh, she's starting the Thriller dance. It's just her out there dancing timidly with the spotlight on her while everyone looks on with the, oh, this is so cringy look on their face. And then, who enters the party but Maddie!
Maddie!
She shimmies over to him, pulling him onto the dance floor. He's very reluctant, as it's been years since he's done the Thriller dance, but he doesn't leave her hanging and starts joining in. The vibe is contagious, with people enthusiastically filtering onto the dance floor to join, including Lucy. And Tamara wants to know, how does everyone inexplicably know the Thriller dance? Did we not get the memo, Corinne? Were we absent that day when they taught it in PE class?
Yes, because I will tell you this. I went to a Halloween party and I showed up early specifically to learn the Thriller dance. And that song is a fucking long ass motherfucking song. It goes on for evs. And still, by the end of it, I had not gotten the hang of the Thriller dance.
Oh, we needed to practice more in our basement back in the day. Well, regardless. The party is flash mobbing to Thriller flawlessly, including the boss man himself, Richard, at the front of the pack, dancing with more verve, flair, and aplomb than I've ever seen. But in the midst of all the joy, Matt gets hit with the, what the fuck am I doing here, stick? His face falls. He stops dancing and tells Jenna, I've gotta go. And he runs off like Cinderella at midnight, except he doesn't leave a glass slipper behind. Jenna is at first sad, but quickly distracted by her effusive boss man who moonwalks up to her and effusively states that she's the best and continues to rock out to the oh-so-long Thriller dance, and now I know why you put that. And by the way, I just want to point out, and this is a very adult thing for me to notice, that I wanted to ask Jenna, where is your purse? Because before she went to go make the song request, she handed it to Tom-Tom. Tom-Tom, in turn, handed it to their boss, Richard. Richard, when he went out to the dance floor, in turn, handed it to some beefy guy that was standing by the bar. Uh-huh. And the beefy guy promptly turned around and put it on the table. Just left it there. There's your purse. Unmanned.
Well, you know, that's why I have a little backpack that I carry with me.
I'm just saying.
That way I can Thriller dance and keep my belongings with me.
Uh-huh. You would expect your friend to hold on to your belongings, but no, not in this movie. Now you know that Tom Tom's really not a good friend. Lucy.
Oh.
I see you, Lucy.
Tom Tom. Ooh. Yeah, Tom Tom's not a good friend. A.K.A. Lucy, not a good friend. Jenna, not a good friend. A lot of not good friends. Matt, excellent friend.
Yeah.
Friend for the ages. The only thing he's not a good friend at is being a boyfriend, which we'll find out later. Jenna has been enjoying 30-year-old life, going on shopping sprees and catching up on her job by reading magazine publishing for dummies. She's got this adulting thing on lock. But does she? When Jenna is out for drinks with Lucy, Lucy notices a hottie making eyes at Jenna. And I think we'll use the term hottie loosely, because that fucker was old and not that cute. But he was...
He was a swarthy 45-year-old if he was a day.
I was like, the age difference... Well, we'll get to it. But yeah. Yeah, 45 is generous for his age. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Jenna looks over her shoulder, and yes, the guy is hot. She puts down her drink and goes over to say hi, walking right past the tall guy who is all ready to say hey to her, and to a table where a 13-year-old boy is sitting all by his lonesome. She asks him out on a date, and he says yes. Yeah. Lucy quickly pulls her away, chastising her and asking if she wants to get arrested. And if we do the math, the age difference between the 13-year-old boy and her and the guy that was checking her out is about the same. However, I would say that the older guy is a more age-appropriate choice for a 30-year-old woman. But yeah.
Yeah. No, I will give you that. But when Lucy points this out, do you want to get arrested? Come on.
Honestly, the 13-year-old boy is cuter than the...
Yes, he was. I was going to say, 13 or not, he was way better looking than the 45-year-old.
Yeah.
And that's what Jenna says when Lucy's like, I meant that guy. Oh, him? No, gross.
Yes. And I'm like, I'm right there with you, Jenna. Right there with
yes.
you.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Not interested in asking out a 13-year-old, but still, 13-year-old much cuter than the 40-plus-year-old that was over there. And I think he felt more like 50-ish, so yeah.
I got the impression that that 13-year-old was probably there with this family that had gone to the bathroom or something, yeah. or, you know, a parent that
yeah.
had just left him momentarily at a table. And I was like, I wonder what they would have done if the mom or dad was sitting there with them when Jenna came and approached.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine him going back to school, like, the next day and just being like, you will never believe what happened. The cutest, hottest woman was like, hey, you want to go on a date?
Yeah, exactly. No one would believe what happened. He would not have. Nope.
So Lucy saves Jenna from herself and they leave the bar. And while Lucy is looking for a cab, two things happen. One, Jenna sees the naked man from her apartment across the street. Lucy points out that it's Jenna's boyfriend, Alex Carlson. Not the best New York Ranger, but the New York Ranger with the best ass. And number two, Matt comes walking down the street with Wendy, his fiancée. Who happens to look a lot like Jenna.
Adult Jenna, not 13-year-old Jenna.
Yeah, adult Jenna, not 13-year-old Jenna. That would be very creepy. I would be way not a Matt fan if it looked like 13-year-old Jenna. Wendy is a weather forecaster in Chicago, and she's excited that Matt will finally be moving there to be with her. Jenna is processing all of this when Alex bops across the street to Jenna and friends, and he whisks her back to his apartment. Lucy is looking like she could spit nails after all the babysitting she's done of Jenna, and then everybody fawning over her and Jenna ditching Lucy on the street. Don't feel too bad for Lucy, though, as Lucy has proved herself over and over again throughout this movie as an adult to be a nasty person to just about everyone other than Jenna. I just haven't included it because time. Alex takes Jenna back to his place, but much to Jenna's disappointment, he doesn't have any board games and he only wants to make out. When Jenna keeps on pushing away his advances, he finally figures out what's wrong. Not that he's actually trying to kiss on a 13-year-old in a 30-year-old's body, not creepy at all, but he promised her a sexy dance. He throws on. Ice, ice, baby. And flexes, and flexes, and strips, and strips, and curls, and rocks it down to his tidy whities.
There are two things that were definitely not sexy about that scene. One, his underwear.
Yes.
And two, who the hell does a strip tease to Ice Ice Baby?
A hockey player does.
Ice Ice. No wonder why you're not getting any play from Jenna there, buddy.
I'm like, oh, tidy whities, I do not miss your reign. Like, they were gross back when they were more universally worn, and I still think they're gross. And I'm like, if any guy that I dated dared to wear tidy whities, I would be getting some new underwear for them, honestly.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. When me and Larry started dating, I asked him, I was like, so what do you wear? And he has boxer briefs, but I didn't hear the boxer part. So when he said briefs, I'm like,
yeah,
I was picturing the tidy whities. And I was like, okay, how can I spin this?
Boxer briefs are good, though.
No, I know, but I did not hear the boxer part of the boxer briefs. I was just like, briefs, boxer briefs, shit. Shit, shit, shit. But then I saw him and I'm like, oh, meow. Yeah. No, those are good. Yeah. I like those.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Boxer briefs are my fave. So, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Jenna's relating her disappointing evening to her new 13-year-old bestie, Becky. He doesn't even have any board games, Becky commiserates. Boys are so disappointing. How come the ones you like never like you? Oh, Lord, help me, Becky. I do not know, but it's the truth. It's the truth of the universe. Jenna advises, love is a battlefield. You gotta fight for it. She slings her purse over her shoulder, turning towards her waiting car and yelling over her shoulder at Becky. Good luck with fractions, Becky yells back. Good luck with work. And Jenna drives off.
And at work, at her work meeting, Boss Richard tells the staff that they're going to have to do a redesign because they're only selling 600,000 copies versus Sparkle's almost 1 million plus. If they don't start selling more, the magazine is done. And even though Sparkle is copying them, they need to differentiate themselves to stand out. Lucy doesn't agree. This is a death sentence for the magazine. But Jenna has brought her can-do attitude to the meeting and says, this is a great opportunity to show what we really've got. Let Sparkle have all our secondhand grody ideas.
Yeah.
She gestures emphatically with her finger that has a fruit roll-up wrapped around it. Oh, I miss those.
Yeah.
I need to get more fruit roll-ups and wrap them around my finger. And continues, we'll open up the FOB overhaul the BOB and show Sparkle that we have plenty of poise left. And with that, the meeting is over. And Richard has given Lucy and Jenna 2 weeks to get their proposals together.
Make it so.
Previously, there had been indications that original 30-year-old Jenna wasn't the greatest person, but if there was any doubt that she was a horrible human being, it's all confirmed when Jenna's assistant starts reading her messages aloud to Jenna. She's called a backbiting bitch, sleazy, conniving snake, pretentious, and before she can go on, Jenna grabs the rest of the messages and retreats to her office, which is now kitted out in Lisa Frank and jumbo pencils. Her assistant calls her once again, letting her know that Pete Hansen, Tracy from the art department's husband's here to see you.
Oh, God.
Jenna has her send him in. And that's when we find out that Jenna's been sleeping with him. But 13/30-year-old Jenna is not taking that shit. She knees him in the balls and swiftly leaves her office as he lies curled up on the floor getting it together.
I love the journey that Arlene goes on with this whole thing, too, because she initially starts off and she just gives her the message and it seems kind of like neutral. And then when she's like, send him in, she looks like, oh, gross. That's just like super shitty. And then when she sees the silhouette of Jenna kneeing him, she's like, okay. And she perks up.
Yeah. Because he was smarmy as fuck when he walks in. And then he tries to put the moves on Jenna. And she's like, ew, gross. What's going on? You're her husband. And she doesn't know what's going on. It's so sad. And she actually has a conscience now, which apparently 30-year-old Jenna did not have.
Yeah.
Jenna heads over to tell Tracy that her husband is a dog when she overhears Tracy and Lucy having a secret meeting. Lucy's doing her own design and doesn't want Jenna to know. Tracy agrees as Jenna's been acting really odd lately. Lucy agrees with the way she's been acting, I don't want to have her around. And you know how she fired Charlotte last week? Well, Jenna stole Charlotte's ideas. So let's do our own idea and let Jenna fall on her ass. they didn't laugh evilly like that. I just thought I would inject it for effect.
I think it works, and I'm here for it. That's why I joined you, because there were two of them. So, you know.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yep. You're in with my evil plot.
Yes, exactly.
Come on in, the water's fine. Ooh, yes.
Yes. Jenna's feelings are hurt, and she leaves the office. She feels all alone and ultimately ends up knocking on apartment 2B in Greenwich Village. Matt's door.
Which village?
Greenwich. Greenwich Village. It's the village.
Greenwich.
Yes, in New York. Yes. She asks him if he's up for a walk, and he kindly agrees. He brings his fluffy pillow with him. No, he doesn't, but it would be cool if he did. She finds out that Matt is just kind of into his fiance, but there's no, baby, he's a firework going on. Then Jenna asks what happened to their friendship, and he explains that after she was ditched during 7 Minutes in Heaven, Matt tried cheering her up, but Jenna threw the dollhouse that Matt spent 2 weeks making for her directly at Matt and didn't speak to him after that day. Yay, Jenna. Way to go. Being a hormonal middle schooler, though, like, oh, all the money in the world. No, thank you.
The struggle's real.
Yes. Matt affably says, but that was a long time ago. And Jenna shakes her head. She's been looking at the woman in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Jenna says, no, stop being so nice to me. I'm not a nice person. I've slept with a married guy, have stolen people's ideas for work, and I don't have any real friends. After her walk and talk with Matt, she takes the train back to her childhood home. Her parents aren't there because of the cruise, and she wanders the empty halls, eventually going into the basement and sitting in the same closet she sat in for 7 Minutes in Heaven and banging against a shelf like she had previously done. But this time, instead of wishing dust falling on her head, an old basketball does, and her parents ultimately discover her because they came home from their cruise to a mystery thumping noise in their house. That wouldn't be disconcerting at all.
Nothing to see here. Cool, 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 cool.
She tearfully hugs her parents and ends up spending the night ultimately climbing into bed next to her mom.
I'm surprised her mom didn't ask if she was on drugs too, because it sounds like they had a pretty tumultuous relationship and Jenna wasn't even taking her calls, and all of a sudden she's like, Mom!
Yeah.
Honey, are you on the weed? Are you on the marijuana? Are you taking the drug us?
Are you on the marijuana train? Toot, toot. I mean, toke, toke.
Nice.
Yeah, that moment is so kind of resonant when she, like, tearfully hugs her parents, though. Like, I remember at one point in time I was unemployed for a chunk of time, and I was leaving my parents' house, and I said to them, I just don't know what to do with myself. Like, I just don't know where I'm going to go, like what direction to go, anything like that. And I just like started crying, and I wasn't embraced in a big hug or anything, because, you know, that's way more affectionate.
Touchy-feely.
Than my family really is. I mean, they're more affectionate now, but it was kind of like that sort of moment of just like crumbling. And I was like, oh, Jenna, I've been there.
Mm.
The next morning, while digging into smiley face pancakes, and then see my dad makes me waffles. I mean, come on.
My God, the parallels are just endless.
Oh my God, am I Jenna? No. Not at all.
I was like, 13-year-old Corinne? Is that you?
No, I never had the popularity potential that Jenna did. I'm much closer.
Quick, who's your crush? Who's your crush?
Chris Grady. I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
River Phoenix. Wrong.
Curses. River Phoenix was definitely my crush. Absolutely. The next morning, while digging into her smiley face pancakes, Jenna asks her mom, Bev, what things she would change about her past. But Bev says, I wouldn't change a thing, because with the mistakes I made, which sucked, I got to learn how to make things right. Jenna appreciates her mom's wisdom and returns to her New York City life reinvigorated. Back at her loft or apartment, penthouse, whatever, huge place in New York City. Mm-hmm. Jenna looks at her old yearbooks and realizes that Matt, who currently makes his living as a photographer, did all the photographs for the yearbook as well. She is inspired and ultimately ends up hiring Matt to do a photo shoot for her poise pitch, going for nostalgic yearbook angle. During the shoot, Jenna and Matt grow closer. At one point, doing a slow dance with each other, and another point, he hands her a flower from a bunch that were for props before he heads out to do the shoot.
At work, Lucy tries gaslighting Jenna. They get in the elevator together, and Lucy says, "I've been trying to call you and just haven't been able to get a hold of you." But Jenna calls her on, "That's funny, I haven't received any messages." So Lucy responds, "Well, I have. Oh, and by the way, I've decided to do something on my own for the presentation. I hope you don't mind. You know, totally last minute." Uh-huh. Jenna smiles like the cat who ate the canary, leans back easily and says, "Not at all. I'm doing my own thing as well." And the elevator door dings open and Lucy is shook as Jenna walks off happily. With Lucy following in her wake. They're not walking together.
I'm like, what does Lucy expect? If they're supposed to be working on this project together and Jenna hasn't approached her about anything.
Mm-hmm. She thought she was going to surprise her. Shock and awe. Oh my God, I'm totally going to ruin you, bitch.
Jenna's omniscient. Don't mess with her.
Mm-mm. At the end of the week, Jenna and Matt are looking at proofs of their photo shoot when Jenna calls for a break. She needs Razzles. They're both a candy and a gum, after all. They find some Razzles in a rando drugstore and walk around New York City at night, ending up at a park where they make a bet. They go on to swings, and whoever jumps furthest off the swings owns the other a celebratory dinner at the 24th Street Diner and an Orange Julius. The stakes are high. Oof. They swing and swing and swing and fly off, both landing pretty much in the same exact spot, rolling onto each other, then staring at each other with hearts in their eyes. The kiss tractor beam is in full effect. Maddie goes in for the kiss, and it's so sweet, except Corinne writes that he's engaged and she's 13.
Yeah.
That's why I said this movie was cast so wonderfully, because Mark Ruffalo has that kind of like, aw shucks, like little kid aura about him that he can bring out. And Jennifer Garner just looks like she has kind of like a childlike face. Not like, you know, she's a grown ass woman, but she has, you know, youthful features, and she can really play him up. And chef's kiss.
Oh, totally. Well, and I feel like she does such a good job of embodying being like a 13-year-old. So physically, she's great in the role as well.
Yes.
Her facial expressions, the way she moves her body. The only thing that I would have a gripe with is how easily she walked in heels from the very beginning. But
I call bullshit too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I still can't walk in heels that good.
You gotta at least do one of those like jerks where she jerks off the side because she falls off her heel. Cut to Matt in his studio. He's got his date with Jenna penciled into his calendar and is looking at it when his eyes are suddenly covered. Instead of turning to violence like Corinne would. he says warmly, "Hey, I wasn't expecting."
Oh.
He turns around and
looks
up.
That's no joke. If somebody out of nowhere covered my eyes, like, there would be elbows flying and,
Do not cover her eyes. Come in for an unrequested hug or tickle her.
No.
And he says, "Hey, I wasn't expecting." He turns around and looks up and it's his fiance, Wendy. He continues after a pause, "To see you here. I thought you weren't coming in until tomorrow." Wendy's a bit confused. "Were you expecting someone else?" And Matt plays it super cool. No, not me. Just surprised to see you. They go to lunch with each other. And while Wendy talks at Matt regarding how he should be moving as soon as possible to Chicago, like now, Matt is in his own world, not paying attention to anything she has to say. Smooth move, Matt. And actually, he has to ask her to repeat herself because his mind is elsewhere, possibly with Jenna? Question mark.
And I feel so bad for Wendy. She seems like a really nice person. And as a younger person watching this, I would be like, Wendy is such a bitch. She wants him to, like, leave New York City and to change him. And I'm like, now I'm like, Matt has his own autonomy, and he can figure out whether he wants to do that himself. Like,
yes, the older you get to, especially, you're like, lock that shit down, girl. Lock that shit down. Who cares? I'm just kidding.
Oh, I'm like, Mark Ruffalo, mm-hmm. You want me to move to New York City? Yes.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going.
For most people, I'd say no, but for you, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna, Arlene and a woman, I have no idea what her name is, but she encouraged Jenna to do her thing on the dance floor when she made the bold thriller move, all worked together to create the presentation for the magazine. Richard, their boss, approaches Jenna beseechingly. The board has my balls in a vise, and I don't know. Oh, and I gotta say, he is played by Andy Serkis. Fantastic.
Mm. Oh, every time I saw him, I kept thinking, precious, my precious, because yes. He played Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
He's amazing. So, the board has my balls in a vise, and I don't know what's going on. Lucy told me she's doing her own presentation, and I have no idea what you're doing. Jenna assures him that his balls won't be completely squozen, and she can give her presentation at 5. Jenna and Arlene leave the fretting Richard to go pick up some prints, laughing giddily together as they head out the door. In the meeting room, we see Lucy's pitch. It's a sight to behold. Super skinny model after super skinny model with their eyes practically blacked out. It looked like, you know, when they have those serial killer pictures or whatever, where it's like, oh, I think Joe the serial killer's been here. And there's like a picture of a, you know, of like a person, but their eyes are like just completely scratched out.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was like that, but black. There was just like these voids where their eyes were because... Mm. Because they took Smokey to a new level.
It was censorship chic.
Ooh, censorship chic. What do you wear for censorship chic? Two little rectangles over your nipples and...
You would actually get duct tape and place them in an X over the nipples with the blocked eyes. Yes.
Nice.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, you're so good. I'm ready for your presentation.
Yes, because that's what she says, I think, Lucy. Death by fashion.
Yes. Lucy narrates. So the models flash onto the screen looking disaffected and angry. Lucy narrates. The new poise will do heroin chic one better. It will kill. Cause of death, chicness, fashion suicide. I can tell Tam's impressed. Lucy.
No.
Lucy is done and is greeted by a room full of stunned people, but not good stunned. No.
No.
Jenna and Arlene make it back just in the nick of time, and Jenna goes for the old school poster board over a PowerPoint presentation. She has pictures of tons of models and points to them saying, who are these people? They're not accessible in any way to us. And then she reveals the yearbook-style photos behind them, showing slices of an all-white, all-American high school life. Jenna says, these are the people whose stories we want to hear. I know this is different from what we've done in the past, but real women are who we should be looking up to. Let's put life, laughter, and fun back into the magazine. We need to recognize what's good, and if we don't, we won't recognize it until it hits us between the eyes. And while the boardroom bursts into applause, Lucy plays Godzilla in the halls of poise, expressing her discontent at her failed proposal. But honestly, if you ask me, both of these proposals are stanky in very different directions.
Oh, I agree.
And I wish that they'd had like a more kind of innovative thing, particularly with Maddie's photography skills. They could have done something very interesting along with the theme of getting to know women. That would have been fine. But doing it being like, oh, hey, we're going 17 magazine style and just having everybody look like white cheerleaders. It was like, what? Okay.
But she's 13, Corinne. That's the extent of her knowledge. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm trying to think about what 13-year-old me would have proposed.
So Here's my thoughts. River Phoenix on the cover, River Phoenix exclusives, River Phoenix interviews, River Phoenix quizzes, River Phoenix centerfolds, and on the B.O.B., River Phoenix.
The F.O.B., the B.O.B., and the C.O.B. River Phoenix.
Yep.
Yes. And you would have been C.C. DeVille.
Oh, my God, no. Plead the fifth. I had a big thing for the Poison guitarist. And I only did so because his makeup skills were better than mine, and I was jealous. I realize that now. He had bigger hair and better makeup than me, and that is all.
His Wet n Wild was glossier, okay?
Oh, my God, it was. It was so glossy.
Oh. Yeah, I'd be like, there need to be women in jeans and graphic tees all throughout this. There is a period of fashion time in the late 90s, early 2000s that I was very fond of. And it was a big graphic tee, short waisted pants, Kersplosion, tiny t-shirts.
Color.
Yes. And I still, whenever I see that moment in time, I'm like, I love your fashion. Can you tell me more?
Little barrettes in the hair.
Yes. Yes. Little barrettes in the hair. Why are you playing with my heart, Tam?
When are you going to come back around? It needs to circle back.
Seriously?
The 70s came back. The 80s came back. Oh, wait. I think the 90s are coming back now, too.
Yeah, they are. I'm like,
oh, happy day. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy.
Like, grunge was, you know, initially a resonant period of time. But that was just more like, I really would have loved that in middle school more than anything because it was it was very depressing kind of, you know, fashion. It would have worked very well with me. I would have been very popular because I would have been like the top of the pile in that look. But
all the flannels.
Right. But really what suits my personality the best is tiny graphic tees, little jeans and like canvas shoes and let's go, barrettes, lots of barrettes everywhere. My hair's too thick for barrettes. Anywho, Jenna heads out to celebrate and Matt heads to Poise to talk to Jenna. So they miss each other, if you didn't pick up on that. Meanwhile, Lucy heads into Jenna's office and starts snooping around and finds several envelopes from Sparkle Magazine in Jenna's desk. Bad place to keep them, Jenna. I'm just saying. And this was not 13-year-old Jenna who put them there. Yeah. You don't keep them at your workplace. Lucy calls Sparkle from Jenna's office. And then time has passed. And Matt comes into the office looking for Jenna. Lucy pretends to be nice, apologizes for calling Matt Beaver, and then tells him that Jenna decided to go a different direction and not use his photos, using a more established photographer. The one who takes photos of Jenna's boyfriend? Ding, 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 ding. Lucy apologizes to him because she thinks that his photos are really cute. She's nagging him. I love it. Lucy has Matt sign a general release saying, maybe we can use your photos in a catalog or something. Jenna gets ready for her date with Matt and shows up at Matt's place. She knocks on the door and Wendy answers, wearing one of Matt's shirts. She warmly greets Jenna, and says that they're getting married tomorrow in a backyard ceremony, but she'll let Matt know that Jenna stopped by. Jenna is very composed, congratulates Wendy, and after the door is closed on her face, heads back out onto the street.
The next day, Jenna's in her office preparing for the presentation to corporate when Richard comes in telling her that it's over. Lucy took all of Jenna's photos to Sparkle. She's their new editor-in-chief. Jenna/Matt's photos are online in Sparkle's website. They once again have stolen their idea, and it's already in their outdoor ads everywhere. After Jenna's done shaking her fist at the sky, yelling, "'Cause you're sudden but inevitable betrayal, bitch, but I saw it coming, Lucy. You're not a good person."
She heads over to Lucy's office and confronts her, but Lucy gives no shit, calls Jenna a hypocrite, and lets her know that she found the envelopes from Sparkle that were strategically hidden in her drawer at work. Why they were there, nobody knows.
Yeah.
And congratulates her on the deal that Jenna crafted with them. Lucy says, I wish I'd thought of it. Help them reach a million in sales, giving them tips and get the editor-in-chief job. But I was able to make it work for me, so now you're stuck here in the magazine that you helped to destroy. Jenna asks, panicked, what about Matt? What did you say to him? Lucy smugly states, I told him you were going to go in a different direction, which you most certainly are now.
Oof.
I'm sure I said something else, but I just can't remember. Oof. And Lucy heads out of the office with her box of stuff. The next day, Jenna heads out the door and sees the Sparkle bus ad that Matt and Jenna had photographed together. She hails a cab and heads to New Jersey. And who's her cab driver? Why, it's Chris Grandy, her high school crush. And he's kind of a smarmy McSmarmington.
Yes.
He's kind of a sad smarmy McSmarmington. He's trying to ask her out. They're in Jersey and they have to stop for a train. And Jenna, in an act of
self-preservation,
thank you, leaps out of the cab and throws cash at him. She runs full force to Matt's house, sneaks upstairs using a large arrangement of flowers as camouflage to let Matt know that whatever Lucy said, it wasn't true. She finds him alone in a room and initially tries to talk him out of getting married, but he says that too much time has passed and he loves Wendy.
Does he know?
And Wendy may not be perfect, but she's good enough.
That's what I want. I want the person who's going to be marry me say, you know, Corinne may not be perfect, which granted I am not, but
yeah,
she's good enough. Oh, yeah.
Settle.
That passion is too much for my little heart there.
Woo. I know. Simmer down now. You're heating up my loins.
Talk dirty to me. Wait, am I kind of okay too?
Oh, no, you're kind of okay. You're absolutely just fine.
Ooh. Well, you're all right. Yeah.
Jenna starts to cry, but she swears that she's only crying because she's happy for Matt and says, I love you, Matt. I just want you to be happy. He looks at her softly and goes into his childhood closet, grabbing the dollhouse and offering it to Jenna. She asks, can I have this? And Matt chuckles, just as long as you promise not to chuck it at me again. But we all know this is going to be Jenna's A1 treasured item. She walks out of the house, clutching her giant dollhouse, sitting on her childhood home's front doorsteps. She closes her eyes, concentrating hard. And the dollhouse in front of her still has some of that magic dust on it. And a magic breeze comes along, lifting the glitter up in the sky and in front of Jenna. And when she opens her eyes, she's back in her 13-year-old body in the closet, hearing Tom/Lucy say to Matt that Jenna's waiting for him in the closet. When Matt opens the door to the closet, Jenna springs on him, tackling him to the ground and giving him a chaste, dry kiss on the lips. 13-year-old Matt, however, is wowed. She really knows what she's doing. She pulls Matt up, and as they head up the stairs, they pass Tom, who has the nerve to come back down to grab her scarf, a.k.a. Jenna's blindfold, from around her neck. But instead, Jenna grabs the paper she wrote for Tom, and the six chicks from her hands, tears it up and calls her a biatch, and pours Tom's cup of punch down the front of her shirt. Jenna and Matt head out the basement, and we flash forward to the present where they get married and move into a cute pink house that is the color of Pepto-Bismol together. As Mr. and Mrs. Flamhoff, because that's Matt's last name.
Yes.
Oh, they live happily ever after the end.
Okay, so would you, if somebody said, that house, Tamara, can be yours, but
yes,
it forever has to stay that color of pink?
Yes. And then I would put a big sign out like those people that support their local congressman that says, this is my house. Yes, it is a god-awful color of pink, but I have to keep it this way in perpetuity. Good Lord, Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give? 13 going on 30.
You know, I loved this movie when it came out. And
a lot of people did.
Yeah. I really actually enjoyed watching it this time around. However, back in the day, would have gotten like a 5 dry kiss from me. Because it had a lot of different things that like really resonated with me in regards to like Matt and stuff like that. And me feeling very much like him. But one, there is a distinct lack of diversity in this movie.
What?
I know. Very minimal representation.
There's 13-year-old representation.
What?
There's nose job representation.
We're going to give Arlene all the props for being the singular representation in the movie. I don't know what her ethnicity is, but if nothing else, she provided size diversity and awesomeness. So way to go, Arlene.
Richard's supposed to be gay.
Yes, that was not really evident to me until the very end. But yes. The reason, though, mainly why it's going to get a lower dry kiss rating is because there's some really squidgy, kind of uncomfortable consent issues throughout this movie. We're like, I understand, we're just supposed to go with the flow, but she has all of these men being, we're excluding the Maddie kiss, because regardless of the fact that he was engaged and she was 13 in a 30-year-old body, there was actual like consent around that kiss. But like she has all these men like literally being physically affectionate with her, and her saying no and them just like keeping on coming on. And she's a 13-year-old, and it's just creepy, even though she's in the 30-year-old body.
They don't know she's 13.
I understand
they don't
that.
Know.
We do not blame the men, although if she says no, regardless of their history, they should back the fuck up. But, ding, 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 that striptease was amazing. The dancing, the flexing. So, I give this movie 3.5 dry kisses. What about you?
Oh, that's pretty good. I did also really enjoy this movie when it came out. I still enjoyed it today, or when I watched it now. But same with you. You were like, oh, Matt brought out so many things in me. The 13-year-old and Jen, I was just like, oh, God. Oh, my 13-year-old existence was just, woof. Mm. I'm so glad, gentle listeners, Corinne and I were contemplating doing a podcast based on our friendship throughout the years, and we both totally agreed it would be way too hard, and this movie makes me realize that we were absolutely fucking correct.
Oh, it was just gonna be straight up depressing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Our childhoods, both at various points in times, were different types of minefields for very different reasons.
Yes.
That all sucked. But that's the only thing I have to say, Nick. Well, not the only thing, but that's one thing that this movie brought up, is that whole like, oh my God, when I was 13. Oh my God, when I was 13. Oh my God, when I was 13.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, I still do think it's a fun movie. Uh-huh. Yes, there's the consent in the 13-year-old and the 30-year-old's body, but it's not like if they pushed it to where she like had sex with somebody, that would have been like, ew. But it's kind of like just, you know, putting on a 30-year-old's body for a day and or a couple of days or a week or however long she was in there, and like being able to try it on.
Yeah.
Which I always, you know, kind of had a fantasy about when I was younger. Like I think most kids do, getting older, seeing how it is to be an adult. But then ultimately she gets to go back, and I bet she crushes it.
Yeah.
She goes back to her childhood. Mm-hmm. She probably just fucking gives all of those 6 chicks a what for. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Agree with the diversity. I didn't realize the creepiness as much until I read it in your script, and I'm like, that is a little problematic, but I'm gonna give him a pass.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna give this movie, just because it's fun and I just let it wash over me, 4 dry kisses.
Nice.
And I'm going to say that it's pretty amazing and not a mayas.
And I feel conflicted, so It's a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah. It's an amazing Emmaus.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Hey, Tamara. What movies do we have coming up? I know we're going on break, but what movies do we have?
I was going to say nothing.
Coming up
in... We don't have anything coming up.
July.
Jinga, 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 jinga. It's not Christmas in July, Corey. We're not doing Christmas in July.
But Christmas.
I know. It's not that we're not doing Christmas in the middle of summer, because we are.
Ooh.
We're just deviating from the rules. We're going to have some sort of freedom theme in July, and then we're going to do Christmas in August because nobody else does it. And why the fuck not?
Yeah.
But our next movie in July is going to be 9 to 5. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Stumble out of bed and tumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition. Woohoo!
Yawn and stretch and try to come to life.
Oh, I know that feeling. Working, we wish 9 to 5. I am super excited about this one. I'm not sure how much rom is in this movie, but there is definitely calm in this movie.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
And I'm super excited about it. Plus, it has, oh my gosh, Dolly Parton. Hello. Mm-hmm. Jane Fonda.
Lily Tomlin.
And Lily Tomlin. Uh-huh. Oh! It's a dynamic trio that can't be beat.
I know. Everybody knows who Dolly Parton is. And you could see Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda in Grace and Frankie on the Netflix right now.
Yeah!
They still got it.
I'm super excited about our unsavvily at this moment in time Freedom July titled month that we have coming up, even though it means that there's no jing, 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 jing in the month of July.
And I am excited that we're taking our little break, which is well deserved. Corinne's got some stuff she's got to do, and I'm going to be in the middle of moving, which is always super fun.
Ooh, you know how to have a good time.
It's being completely sarcastic.
It's also the Blessed Tamara's birthday month. What, what?
Yay.
What, what? Speaking of birthday.
That was supposed to be like my spiritual. Oh, I don't know what it was. <Cut
that. laughs> We're tired. I get it.
Yeah.
Speaking of birthday and birthday wishes, coming up in July, what kind of hopes and dreams do you have for the month of June in regards to ratings?
Oh, let me see. Well, I hope and wish, and I'm going to blow out my birthday candles and pray that we get more 5-star ratings. So if you haven't, dear listener, and you like our show, we would love it if you would give us a 5-star rating anywhere that you listen to this podcast. And Corinne, do you think we should maybe sweeten the pot of taking a shorter break if we get a certain amount of ratings or reviews?
Yes, what do you think? Like 5,000 ratings and reviews?
Yeah, we'll be on break till 2072, 2072.
No, this would just be shortening the break. So maybe
we'll
come back early if, how about instead of 5,000, 50?
That sounds good.
50?
I think that's doable. That's pie in the sky dreams, but why not?
5-star ratings and reviews. We will have a special full-size early episode just for those listening ears of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any thoughts about that, our break in June, want to just wish us a lovely time, or are excited about
Curse us out for being gone.
That too. Freedom July. You can reach out to us at wonderkiss@gmail.com, or you can find us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at wonderkiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E, and as always, again, with the ratings and reviews. Even if it's not in June, if you want to do it now, that's totally fine too. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next month. In the month of July.
In the month.
Yes. Bye, gentle listeners.
Bye.
Oh, it's my turn. Sorry.
No, I'm just going to sit here and gaze lovingly at you for about 2 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, hello.
Oh, wait, that's probably not good for a podcast, though.
I stare. You stare.
We stare.